All right, buckle up for a deep dive, folks. We're tackling Janus v. AFSCME today. Huge case, went all the way to Supreme Court, public sector unions, big changes. Imagine, just imagine being forced to, financially support a cause you absolutely disagree with. That's what's at the heart of this whole thing, this landmark decision.
Well, the really fascinating thing about Janus is that it didn't just like settle one dispute. It flipped things upside down, overturned like decades of precedent, really reshaped like the whole legal scene for public sector unions. I mean, talk about worker rights, free speech, even, collective bargaining, the core of it.
Yeah. No small potatoes here. We're gonna untangle it. Constitutional clashes, you've got dissenting opinions. Consequences we're still seeing play out. Step by step, let's break it down. First, who is this Mark Janus guy? How did he end up like in the spotlight, the Supreme Court spotlight?
So Mark Janus, he was a child support specialist working for Illinois, the state. Not a union member himself, though. The union in his workplace was American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, ASCME.
AFSCME, right. But there's a twist, right?
Oh, yeah. Big twist. Janus, not a member. But Illinois law said you got to pay agency fees to AFSCME.
Okay, so agency fees, what are we talking about? What was the problem for Janus?
So these fees for Janus, about $45 a month, supposed to cover the union's costs, right? Collective bargaining, representing employees, even those, well, like Janus, those who opted out. Important to separate this from dues, full union dues. Janus wasn't against like paying for basic representation. The problem was being forced to fund stuff he didn't support, activities, especially, political stuff, conflicted with his own views.
Classic clash then. Individual versus the might of the union. How'd this regular guy end up at the Supreme Court? Didn't happen overnight, right?
Winding road, yeah. The first challenge actually came from the governor back then, Illinois, Bruce Rauner. Back in 2015, he filed a lawsuit, said these agency fees not constitutional.
Didn't Rauner get kicked off the case, though?
Exactly. Court said no standing. So that's when Mark Janus steps in, along with some other state employees, pick up the fight. They claim these mandatory fees, violating their First Amendment rights. Pretty bold, considering the history, the precedent.
Yeah, I bet the lower courts weren't too keen on like overturning everything. What happened early on?
Predictably, the lower courts sided with the state initially, leaned heavily on a 1977 case, Supreme Court case, Abood v. Detroit Board of Education, which had upheld these agency fees. Janus and his team, though, they pushed on.
Years of legal back and forth, then boom, Supreme Court showdown. Talk about pressure. What was the big question, the legal question that justices had to wrestle with in Janus?
It all boiled down to this. Does making public employees who aren't in the union pay these agency fees, does that violate the First Amendment? Remember, we're talking about the First Amendment, a cornerstone.
And to get it, we need to understand compelled speech, right? The idea that forcing someone to pay for a message they hate is like forcing them to say it, even if they never open their mouths.
Exactly. That's where Alito's majority opinion really comes in. He argued that making someone subsidize a union speech, even if it's, not political on the surface, it's still compelled speech.
And this is where things get tricky. Public sector bargaining, inherently political. Negotiating like wages and benefits for public employees, I mean, that affects government, right? Policies and spending.
Oh, absolutely. Justice Alito hit that hard. He said, look, when public sector unions, they're negotiating wages, pensions, they're directly impacting government budgets, policy decisions, the whole thing inherently political. Mandatory agency fees, well, they could be seen as forcing employees, supporting a specific political stance.
Wow. Start to see how this case really shake things up. So the majority focused on that compelled speech argument. But Alito didn't stop there, did he? He addressed the reasons that had been used to back these fees for years. It's like, stopping free riders, benefiting from negotiations, but not chipping in.
Right. Alito, he went after those arguments too. Said the justifications in Abood, things like keeping the peace, labor peace, and preventing, the free riding, not strong enough, not when you weigh them against the First Amendment. It's like he was saying, the First Amendment, that's a big deal. Can't just ignore it. Can't just brush it aside with vague ideas about harmony in the workplace.
They really went for it, huh? Taking out Abood like that. Big move, right? Overturning what, a 41-year-old precedent? That's got to be a big deal. What was their reasoning for such a like dramatic change?
Oh, it's huge. Gets to the heart of, how the court deals with its own past. Stare decisis, sticking to precedent. Alito, he acknowledged that, of course. But he said sometimes, got a break from the past when a decision is just just wrong, fundamentally.
We respect precedent, but sometimes you gotta fix a mistake.
Right. What specifically did Alito have against Abood? He basically said Abood, it wasn't well thought out, caused practical issues, and just didn't fit with how we see the First Amendment now. To make his point, he brought up how public employees, their speech is already limited, more so than private sector folks, so forcing them to pay for union speech, even more problematic in that context.
Interesting point, that unique situation, public employees, free speech rights. But it was 5-4, right? Strong dissent. What were the other justices saying, the ones who disagreed?
Justice Kagan wrote the dissent, and she had some serious worries about what overturning Abood would mean, would do. Her main point: messing with a precedent this old, this settled, throws everything off. Labor relations, chaos. She argued without the guarantee agency fees, unions, they could lose a lot of money, weaken them, make it harder to actually represent workers.
Classic dilemma then, right? Individual rights butting heads with the good of the group. Workers, in this case, the union. How did the court deal with that? That tension.
That's the core of Janus, really. The majority, they hammered it home. Individual rights, you can't assume they've been waived. And the First Amendment, protecting individual expression, that comes first. Before the interests of any institution, even powerful ones, unions included, they were saying, basically, protecting free speech, that's number one, even if it potentially weakens unions.
Compelling argument. So what happened after the decision? Did everyone just like stop and stare, let it all sink in? Doubt it.
Oh, no way. Janus sent shockwaves, man. Public sector, boom, instant right to work environment across the board. We're talking government jobs here specifically.
Right, right to work. We hear that a lot, but could we break that down? Some listeners might not be, you know, labor law experts.
Good point. Important to clarify, right to work state, unions can't force non-members to pay those agency fees we've been talking about. So after Janus, bam, public sector unions nationwide lose a major funding source, no more guaranteed money from non-members, which had been like a bedrock for them financially.
Big blow, huh? What do they do? Unions, I mean? What happened to labor relations in the public sector? Big picture.
Total whirlwind. Uncertainty, adaptation, public sector unions scrambling. We saw tons of lawsuits challenging existing agreements, legislative fights trying to find workarounds like opt-in systems where employees would have to choose to pay, contribute to the union, and even talk of like totally new funding models for unions.
Opt-in systems, how would those work practically? And would they like solve the agency fee problem, the one Janus created?
Okay, so opt-in, no more automatic deductions from non-members. Unions would have to convince people to pay voluntarily, prove their worth, show concrete benefits to potential members. It's a huge change. Before those agency fees, they were a sure thing.
Feels like we're watching labor law change in real time as unions adjust. So what now? What's next for public sector unions in this post-Janus world?
It's a big question. Too early to say, really, what the long-term, you know, impact of Janus, what it'll be. But one thing's for sure. Things have changed for public sector unions legally, politically, big time.
No going back. Huh?
Right. We might see some states trying different things to help with the funding, maybe allowing unions to charge like for specific services to non-members. But right now, Janus, it's a win for people who, you know, value individual speech, even if it maybe weakens unions a bit.
So much to consider. Let's zoom out for a sec. Big picture. What are the key takeaways from this whole Janus v. AFSCME thing? What should our listeners, what should they really remember about this landmark decision?
When you connect it all, I think Janus really shows us how you know, constitutional stuff, principles, they're all tangled up with economic policy, labor policy. It forces us to think about individual rights butting up against group interests. And it asks us, what are unions for in a democracy?
Makes you think. And it shows that, well, even precedents, even ones that have been around forever, decades, they could be challenged, they could be overturned. Law's not static, right? It changes with the times.
Exactly. Which brings us to, well, the big question. Will Janus ultimately, will it help individual workers or will it hurt the power of collective bargaining in the long run?
I mean, it depends probably on how unions, workers, lawmakers, how they all, you know, adapt to this new reality, the one the court created. Lots to ponder. We've just scratched the surface, folks. Janus v. AFSCME. Big consequences. And they're still playing out. Dig in, read those dissenting opinions, see what legal battles pop up, what's happening, form your own conclusions. This is a fascinating chapter in American labor law.
And remember, Law isn't just, you know, a bunch of old rules, gathering dust. It's alive. It shapes everything. Society, workplaces, our lives. So stay engaged, stay informed, keep those legal minds sharp.
That wraps up our deep dive into Janus v. AFSCME. Thanks for joining us, folks. We'll catch you next time for another exciting look at the law. Always changing, always interesting.